this to be pretty spicy unto itself.
Sure. Well, the first state visit that President Trump has hosted, so there'll be a fancy dinner, there'll be a large reception, not as large as under the previous couple of administrations, but still, compared to what the White House has done before, this will be the most elaborate visit of a foreign leader that it has dealt with.
So what's the difference between what's happening now with the Macrons and every other world leader that comes to visit the White House?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, typically, particularly in Washington, well, so later this week, Angela Merkel from Germany will visit, and there will be working meetings with lower-level staffers, and there will be probably an hour or two of one-on-one time, maybe with, you know, an aide or two on the side between the two leaders, and then a couple of questions. And that's more of the norm. What will happen here is there'll be a kind of multi-day affair that will culminate in a large formal dinner with guests. This time will be only Republican guests, but people from not only politics, but entertainment and people with some sort of connection to France. And the purpose is more than just the individual issues, which is what you have in a normal visit of a foreign leader, but sort of the overall U.S.-France relationship and emphasizing the importance of that.
Well, Trump has kind of a different relationship with Macron anyway. I mean, they did seem, at least earlier, to have sort of a bromance thing going. And at least Macron says he thinks that they have a fair amount in common. Both of them consider themselves to be somewhat of a maverick. And both of their elections were a surprise to each country, so they have that. But there are some very serious issues on the table, too, particularly when it comes to Syria and Iran, too.
That's right. And this is something where Macron has said, and he is hoping to, he claims, actually, that Trump has said to him that the U.S. would remain in Syria, which is different from what Trump has said over the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
He said that we would be getting out in a couple of days. Then we saw this missile strike. That was between the U.S., U.K., and France against the Syrian regime. And now it seems that maybe we will stay there. So this is something that Macron wants. He is willing to have France be the leader as well. So he's sort of offering to take the leadership role in the region from the U.S. if Trump is hesitant about that. But this is something that, you know, Trump has a tendency to sort of change positions fairly quickly, so we'll see what actually comes out of the meeting. And of course, Macron wants the U.S. to stay in the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA. Trump has indicated that we very well might withdraw in mid-May when the next opportunity to do that comes up, and I think Macron will push as hard as he can on this. I'm not sure whether that will work, but I think he will give it his best shot.
Yes, there's been much discussion about trade. And Macron has said that it's not a great idea to touch your allies in this particular way. And so in what other areas is France so important to the U.S. moving forward?
Well, you know, France is still one of the largest military powers in the world. It's a very large economy. It is one of, you know, the kind of major European powers. They are very involved in military campaigns in West Africa against ISIS and against al-Qaeda allies, and they have done a tremendous amount there. And what did they do? Frankly, you know, the less that we have to do. Having that relationship, I think, is important, and having a high level of coordination. And that's why it really doesn't make sense to me, or apparently to President Macron, why you would, in some sense, penalize your ally by having tariffs that impact them directly. So I think that he has a very strong case. Whether that will work or not, it remains to be seen.
In some cases, it's tough to distinguish between a sanction and a tariff, I'm sure, for many of our allies. And let's switch gears for a moment, if we can, Jonathan, and talk about Mike Pompeo and whether he will become the next Secretary of State of the U.S. He's in committee today, and it's not a done deal for him, is it?
It's not a done deal, but I would mention of West Virginia maybe an hour and a half ago, said on Twitter, via his official Twitter account, that he would support Pompeo. So I would be very surprised if it doesn't go through. And, you know, sort of the you know, you could do worse than Pompeo. That's not a great
example. That's a great slogan for the opening. You could do worse.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the reality. And so, you know, I think that Pompeo will be a step up from Tillerson. I think that having someone who clearly has the president's ear is, you know, I may not agree with the policies, but I think it's better for all foreign powers, friend and foe, to sort of know that when they're speaking to the Secretary of State, he represents the view of the president.
And that's the job description, isn't it?
Right. And he's not necessarily a policymaker. Obviously, it's an influential position. But whatever Trump decides, he'll have to carry out. And I think that it makes sense to have someone who has the confidence of the president and someone who, by all accounts, again, he's, I think, has some extreme positions. But I don't think anyone really doubts his intelligence or his ability just to do the job.
This is a natural progression, Jonathan, for someone who's head of the CIA to become a Secretary of State.
Oh, it's normal. I mean, I wouldn't say that it happens regularly, but, you know, I think that it certainly has a certain logic. It's a step up if you look at sort of the line of succession to the president.
Right.
And it's someone, you know, you're going from, he had the same level of access to classified information. He has formed relationships with foreign leaders, foreign intelligence services, foreign diplomats, and that I think will probably serve him well in the next position. So, you know, it does make some sense to me.
And one of our senators, Dianne Feinstein, who's switching gears again, is a little bit on the fence about Gina Haspel heading up the CIA. How do you see her future?
Well, this is really a much trickier one, in part because we don't know as much about her. She has a very limited public record because it is highly classified. But what people do know is about her potential possible role in the destruction of videotapes of tortured suspects at CIA black sites, the sort of secret prisons that came up in the post-9/11 years. And she very well may have played a significant role in those programs. And in particular, the soreness tapes, which went against a court order. We don't know all the details. We may never know all the details. Presumably, the appropriate senators, particularly Senator Feinstein, will know this from their committee positions. So I think, and you know, she also won't have the personal relationship that Pompeo already had with a lot of people on the Hill. People will be meeting her for the first time. Now, again, we are in sort of this 2018 era of, well, if we don't have this person, who is it going to be? And, you know, when the person being named could be anybody, I can understand the argument both ways. Do you want someone who actually has knowledge and experience, or does the particular experience, is it so bad in practice that maybe you want someone else? But it would be a very tough call, I think. And I think it could go either way in that case.
Well, it's always the weight scale, isn't it? The W-E-I-G-H-T scale.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. Jonathan, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate your input.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That is Jonathan Crystal, a fellow at the World Policy Institute. That is.